I know I was shocked. I mean, when Mike Lindell or someone he supports loses an election, Dave Harrigan, he accepts it and just moves on with the rest of his life.
Of course.
Or maybe he doesn't. I guess that turned into his, basically his life's cause after the 2020 election with the president. He spent extraordinary sums of money, offered up theory after theory after theory, court rulings, costs. And he still believes the president won in 2020. So does the president, even though, by the way, he's president again. So Mike Lindell jumps into the governor's race. He's running to represent the Republicans. Polling shows he is ahead. But in the end, he loses, and he loses rather decisively to the Speaker of the House, Lisa Damith. He tips his hand quickly and says something's not right and talks about filing for a recount. The story continued yesterday when the news came out that Mr. Lindell is withholding a payment, which he said he was going to pay the whole thing, of $825,000, claiming that the Secretary of State's office has proposed an unlawful recount process. This part of the, what they're complaining about is campaign said the state officials intend to recount only votes cast for Lindell and Damith and not all of the votes cast in the Republican gubernatorial primary. He continued today when he went to the Minnesota Supreme Court and filed a petition for a correction of errors, omissions, and wrongful acts with the Supreme Court. And the individual named in his official capacity is the Secretary of State, Steve Simon, who is on the line right now. Steve, like all of our guests, is on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Steve, a pleasure to have you on. Does Mr. Lindell have merit to what he's raised legally?
Well, as you just said, and thanks for having me on, you know, he sued us. He sued the Office of Secretary of State. So forgive me, I'm on a little bit of a short leash here because this is in litigation. But we did put out a statement talking about the basics. And no, we disagree, as you might imagine, as to the merits of this. We showed him this recount plan a week ago. So this was available to him and anyone in the public. And it's the exact same way this has been done for the last two decades. I'm sure your audience remembers, or many of them do, the Coleman-Franken knockdown, drag-out recount battle of 2008. This was the same rule there, where there are two candidates. There's a dispute about which one was victorious. And you have a pile for candidate A, candidate B, and then a pile that's for none of the above. And so this is simply doing what Minnesota has done for decades. We think it's faithful to the statute and to all the rules. And, you know, a court will decide, obviously. That's the tricky part here. And look, it's his right to order this recount, as it is any candidate who loses, if they want to pay for it, if it's beyond a certain margin. But at this point, you know, it's got to be done within a certain scope in the law. It's not a scope that we decide in our office. It's our read of the law and just the longstanding practice. It's just the way it's been.
So, obviously, I remember very well Coleman-Franken talked about it endlessly. In that case, you have two individuals. You had a couple other minor candidates, but Coleman and Franken were the main participants. In this, you obviously also had Kendall Qualls. You also had Democrats running with Amy Klobuchar prevailing and other candidates. Why not just include the recount of everybody involved in the totality of the race?
You know, I think that just starts and ends with the law. I mean, the law says it's got to be segmented in this way. So, but if someone involved in that Democratic side of the ballot for governor wanted to do the same thing, then I suppose you could have a side-by-side recount of all of it. But, you know, we really got to be careful to be faithful to what the law says, not our personal opinions, not the way we wish it were, but what does the law say and what is the practice? And so that's what we're sticking with here. And look, it's his right to contest it. We'll see what the court says. But we're sticking with the way it's been and what we think is faithful to the law.
Do you think the law is absolutely clear cut, no doubt about it, or is there some subjectivity to the law like we see almost every day with the law?
Yeah. Oh, sure. I mean, there's always a way a court could look at it in a certain way. That's why we argue these things, of course. But we think that the better arguments are on the side of our interpretation, which is the longstanding interpretation, like I said. And he's free to make his arguments, right? That's why we go to courts, right? We make an argument, someone else makes an argument, and we'll comply with whatever the Supreme Court said.
Do you expect a fairly prompt decision?
I do, yeah. Just in the interest of time here, I mean, we're talking about a recount, and this is a big process. This is 87 separate counties across the state of Minnesota and some cities, and it takes time and effort and energy and costs money, as you said, north of $800,000.
Yep.
And so the sooner you can get something like that out of the way, keep in mind, we're 70 days away today from the general election, so all the folks who do elections around the state of Minnesota and these local governments, they're prepping for that big show. And voting in Minnesota, absentee voting, starts 3 weeks from Friday on September 18th. So they're really in it right now. They're locked in on the general election. So the sooner they can get something like this over with, if there were to be a recount, the better.
Secretary of State Steve Simon is with us. I think some might look at this also, Steve, and say, now, wait a second. According to your numbers right now from that election on the Republican gubernatorial side, Lisa Daymoth had 179,683 votes. Mike Lindell was second, 134,282. That is such a large margin. Why is the office even wasting its time? Because in a lot of other races, it has to be within a certain percentage. And this isn't a small gap. This is a notable lead or a notable victory for Lisa Daymoth.
Right. It's about 45,000 votes, right? But look, I mean, we got to bow to what the law says here. And the law says that there's an automatic taxpayer-funded recount if a candidate wants it, if the margin statewide is 0.25% or tighter. But if it's beyond that, if it's 0.26%, then the only way you get a recount is if a candidate pays for it by themselves. I mean, I've said for a long time before this, if someone loses by 1 million votes under this law in Minnesota, as long as they pay for it, they could order up a recount. And so really, it's kind of...
Do you think we should have that? Like, let's say I run against you, and you beat me by 750,000 votes.
It would be more than that.
Yeah, okay. I lose way more. I lose by 10 million votes. Okay, thanks, Dave. Should I be... I mean, isn't this... Doesn't it get to the frivolous point? Doesn't it get to slowing down the election process?
I would say this. I can see the legislature, and I would agree with maybe some upper limit. I don't know what that is, right? It's in the eye of the beholder. What is long shot versus waste of time versus thoughtful inquiry into irregularities, right? It's tough to draw a line, but do I think theoretically there could be a line that people could agree on? Yeah, I do. This one's 45,000, you know, where that falls, we'll see. But it is his right under the current law to order this. And if the courts decide that one goes forward, of course, we will salute and we will work with our partners in the counties and cities to get it done.
Just two quick points in this one. I want to ask about the mail-in voting Supreme Court. Somebody says if the recount costs $800,000, what did the actual election cost?
That's a good point. A lot. You know, we have experience with that because this is getting in the weeds. But every 4 years, the legislature asks us to price out the presidential nominating primary. The one that happens in March of the presidential election year has to do with reimbursing the counties. And it's basically to put on an election. And this is just a ballpark figure here. But we're talking about $10 million, maybe creeping up to 11. For a statewide general election, all told, if you add everyone's costs in, all the counties, all the good local folks doing their work, that's about what you're talking for the whole election.
Last thing on this. When you and your staff presented Mike Lindell, here's what we do, here's how we interpret this law, as you said about a week ago, what was their reaction?
Well, I wasn't in the room, but and that's going to be something that's litigated, so I got to be careful there. But I will just say this. I understand there to have been no objection until very recently, and we'll see what the courts say about that.
Let's move to the Supreme Court and mail-in voting. The president is obsessed with this. He believes it's the only reason why he lost in 2020. It's rather convenient that he continues to use the process himself to vote. Right. Also, the fact that there are a number of states which continue to elect primarily Republicans, and they have mail-in voting exclusively. The president conveniently forgets about this, but we had a ruling yesterday where it was 6-3, and the liberal justices were very upset. And I think some see the headline and say, wait a second, does Trump win? Should I worry about my mail-in voting? Take people through what happened and why a lot of people now believe on further glance, and you would know this right away, but the public may have further glance to say, wait a second, did anything really happen?
Yeah. Well, first, let me say, I think this is the most important thing from my standpoint. I just want all of your listeners to know nothing has changed for any Minnesotan. There are a lot of procedural hoops and hurdles with this thing. There are going to be some downstream effects. We can talk about that in a second. But nothing has changed. You can still vote by mail. You can still vote early in person. You can still vote on Election Day. But the mail piece is still fine. None of these processes have changed. It's possible the Supreme Court opened the door so that in the coming days and weeks, I suppose something could change. But look, I like our chances. I say are because Minnesota was one of 23 states, is one of 23 states that has gone to court to try to stop this thing. And mainly, just to zoom out for a minute, just the Constitution we think is quite clear. It says that states are in charge of what they call the time, place, and manner of elections, except Congress can step in and pass a law like they did with the Voting Rights Act, for example, once upon a time.
Yeah.
But it says nothing in the Constitution about a president, this one or anyone, just waving a magic wand in the Oval Office through executive order and starting to take over aspects of elections administration. So on the strength of that and some other arguments, I am cautiously optimistic that we're going to get this thing stopped. The Supreme Court, though, has opened up the door now so that if that argument isn't successful, we could see what I think is just a lot of disruption and confusion and chaos. Like I said, we got 3 weeks from this Friday till the whole thing starts in Minnesota, true. 70 days till Election Day. So stakes are high.
Yeah. So again, just precisely, the order called for the federal government to draw up a list of eligible voters, suggested that the Postal Service should refuse to deliver mail ballots in states that don't comply with new rules. For the person who hears you and says, well, okay, it's a states' right issue, and then they say, okay, should Steve Simon and the state of Minnesota come up with the list of eligible voters, work with the Postal Service, and only deliver mail-in ballots to those addresses, you say what to that person?
I say, I wish it were that simple. What this executive order seeks to create is some sort of black box process that none of us can see inside of, where the Department of Homeland Security is going to create some sort of list, yes, with the state, with the help of states, but they're going to create the list, and then they and only they are going to be the traffic cops of this thing. They're going to figure out when a piece of mail goes past their nose, thumbs up, thumbs down, does it get delivered or not? We're not in that room. We don't know what's inside the black box. So apart from just the constitutional issue that this is not a thing for a president of the United States or the executive branch to do, there's just this murkiness about what this process is. And I just think a lot of people are going to be confused by this. They're going to be alarmed by this if this were to go through. Again, I want to repeat, nothing has changed. This opens the door for us to have the legal argument about all this, but nothing right now has changed. Every Minnesotan who wants to vote by mail can still and should still vote by mail until further notice.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, this is something we've never seen before.
Yeah. I mean, part of what the high court said in the ruling in the 6-3, this does not mean any measure taken by the government to implement the order will necessarily be lawful. On that score, time will tell. So the way it was worded to the Supreme Court in this part of the executive order, do you think they ruled the way they should have? At least in this ruling, not in the final decision in changing this dramatically.
No, I disagree with it. I disagree with it because they basically were saying that, well, you know, in order to freeze the executive order pending all this litigation, the states have to show that there was some harm. I think the harm is we're 70 days from the election. In Minnesota, we're 24 days from starting voting in Minnesota. So the harm is the confusion and the chaos that's being sown by all this and the misdirection. So, look, it is what it is. They decided the way to decide it. You're right to say, though, Chad, I don't want to be overly alarmist about this. Like I said, all they did was open the door to having the argument, which we now definitely will, about whether this thing can proceed even further, I like our chances. I think our arguments are the best arguments, but they did open the door, but nothing has changed for Minnesotans. I just keep coming back to that.
Yeah.
It's the same. Everyone can still vote by mail. No black box for now.
Obviously, they have to decide on this very quickly, too, right? If this would somehow affect. I mean, can you imagine the scenario if this somehow was put in play?
I can't. And I got to tell you, I mean, I'm no expert on all the sort of databases and machinery and all the rest, but I don't understand how the federal government could stand up this architecture, this machinery of this process where they're flagging up and down on individual pieces of mail in the next 70 days. I just don't get how that could happen. I mean, physically, logistically, how that could happen. And look, people.
Unless that's a way for us not to have a midterm election.
Well, we'll have an election, that's for sure. But the question is, under what circumstances? And look, I always say before every election, I got two goals: high turnout, low drama. That's what I'm aiming for. And we got high turnout routinely in Minnesota, record-breaking 2 weeks ago in the primary. We're almost always number one in America in turnout. Pretty confident about that. The low drama part, to be continued. That's what we're trying to ensure here, is just smooth sailing, keep with the rules that we have, don't disrupt things this late in the game. If you want to talk about 2028, fair argument. But, man, I mean, we're 24 days to go. There are some states, I understand, that are starting even earlier, like early September. We're September 18th. So we're in it. We're almost really in it.
Steve, thanks for your time. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
The Secretary of State, Steve Simon, right here on News Talk 830 WCCO. We are going to get back to Dolly when Jamie joins us in about 5-6 minutes. Texter's very upset that we weren't talking Dolly when we were talking to Steve Simon. And as I tried to point out to the texter, that people are in and out. I get it. For the folks who listen to us all the time, from when Gracie starts to through H Lake, thank you. You are an extraordinary minority. This isn't our station. This is every station across America. The average person listens about 10, 11 minutes. And then they keep doing something. Then maybe they come back, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you want to keep people as long as possible. But it happens a lot when people will tune in, maybe including at 2:15, and say, how can you not be talking about Dolly when, by the way, from 106 to 1:30, that's all we talked about. With, I think we read about 60 texts, talked about so many aspects of her amazing life, talked about her as the most beloved person, the amazing career she's had. So I appreciate that you're listening. But just understand, just because we're not covering a topic at that particular time doesn't mean we haven't discussed it or maybe won't revisit it again.
The beauty of this time in our history of humans is we have the podcast.
Yeah.
It's already up. You can find it.
It's there.
Wherever you go for the podcast, the Dolly Parton segments will also tweet it out on your account, as I mentioned on the tweet. It's the life. It's the music. It's the acting.
It's
the philanthropy. It's the personality. All of it made her the most beloved person in America.
Yeah.
And we spent two good segments on, I mean.
And we're going to spend another segment with Jamie on Dolly. Listen, no matter the time of day, people are doing different things. And I get it. Send texts. But also understand, I'm going to react to your texts. Like, if you just want a show that says, oh, thank you. Okay. Because I do thank you for listening. Thank you for texts. There's so many great options out there. But if the only response is thank you, that's not what we do. We might go back and forth. We might agree with your point, whatever. But just understand, if you're not listening in total, we may have discussed something before. Play me the audio that I didn't see live, but this is Alex Preti's family talking to George Stephanopoulos in a longer interview, exclusive interview. Here's a part of what the family had to say.
We watched it on TV, and I was like, that's our son. That's Alex. And they killed him. No one called us. No one.
we still haven't heard from him.
Yeah, that's how we found out.
Think about that. Think about that.
Unbelievable.
Alex Pretty. Gunned down on the streets of Minneapolis with, what was it, five individuals on top of him?
Plenty.
While he has a gun he's legally allowed to carry, while he is coming to the defense of someone else.
The gun which was removed, by the way.
Yeah. Someone clearly overreacts and is screaming, gun, 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 and he's dead right there on the street. Now, I will add, the video that came out later, which had happened, what, a week or two before, was he a little more confrontational in that particular matter? Yeah, he was.
A lot more.
A lot more. Okay? That changes nothing about the fact he came to the aid, the officers reacted, they have him completely and totally under control. And what we hear from so many people, if you have a license to carry, you are allowed to, and I agree. He legally had the right. Think about all the violence that was taking place associated with Operation Metro Search. And the family, the mother, the father, and his sister, watch it and see their son or brother dead on the street and nothing from the federal government so far. Nothing. Don't know the name of the shooter. Remember we heard, we discussed this yesterday also, about a month ago, when there was going to be more information shared from the federal government. Renee Good, Alex Pretty. And a day or two later, we had on our guy Luger, who's going to join us. What day is Andy at the fair with us? Is it Tuesday? I think it's Tuesday.
With us, yes, Tuesday the 1st.
Tuesday, where he said, don't count on much. If they were going to provide information, they would have done it. Don't forget the lies that Greg Bovino, Christy Noem, Stephen Miller, and J.D. Vance, who retweeted Stephen, calling him a terrorist, a threat, looking for mass casualties. Give me a break. His family doesn't get a phone call, an explanation. State authorities, yes. If you want to say we're still investigating the case, we're going through the process, but it happens from a federal government employee. And this man's dead on the street and nothing from the family. We've seen how this federal government reacts, by the way, when it's an ally of the president. If you even say something wrong about that person, they'll come down and try to eliminate you from your job. And by the way, some of those comments were disgusting, too. If you were reveling in Charlie Kirk's death, gross, vile, I have zero interest in it. But in other words, Dave, it's just, you're on our team, then we'll respond. We perceive you not on our team. Meaningless.
Correct.
Just meaningless. That's what we get from this administration. You're either on our team or you're not, and the obvious reaction will continue throughout this presidency, which is unacceptable. It seems pretty clear the most beloved individual in our country has left us today. Dolly Parton, the news breaking about 12:55 or so our time from her nephew in a video that Dolly wanted posted. Her nephew, who had been her bodyguard for a couple decades, his father had been Dolly's bodyguard for a couple decades before that, that Dolly, at the age of 80, everything she has done, Jamie Yuccas, through music and philanthropy and acting and the talk shows and the genuine kindness and I mean, if you didn't agree with Dolly Parton, it's time to look deeply in the mirror. When you think of Dolly Parton, what comes to mind?
Oh, I mean, I love the movie 9 to 5. My mom and I, like, would watch that together, and I love, you know, I mean, what a classic with Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda and Dolly and, I don't know. But, I mean, I just loved everything about her. I think about, like, the Super Bowl performance a couple years ago where she comes out, she's in the sequins, and she looks amazing, and I just, yeah, I mean, everything you're saying, I think, like, all the philanthropy she did, I've read hundreds of news stories, I feel like, of when she's donated books or donated money to charities or to rural causes or libraries, and you gotta love Dolly.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love more text. We had a huge response early on the show when people reached out, and when you think of Dolly, what first comes to mind, love to include those with Jamie right now, 651-461-9226. You know, it doesn't have to be just judged by the dollar amount, right? Philanthropy and charity can be whatever is within your sphere, okay? Volunteering, showing up, your family showing up, money. But the fact that this was so essential to the totality of her life with child literature in so many ways, and the fact that it was in the hundreds of millions of dollars.
Jim, oh, yeah.
That is staggering.
Well, and I just, you think about, you know, I read her backstory of just growing up so poor, you know, and not having anything. And you think about, like, I think people go one of two ways in life. It's either like you're put in that situation, and maybe you don't have the opportunities like she did or, you know, things to get out. But if you do, you know, it's like you either really make something yourself and are able to really give back, or you kind of, you know, turn your back and run away and enjoy your millions. And she didn't do that. You know, she could have very well grown up poor, like bought anything she ever wanted. I mean, she probably still did, but, you know, like she didn't have to do any of that. Like from a psychological perspective, it's like it just says about so much about her character that she would want to then give back to, you know.
She grew up with 11 siblings.
I know.
11. I mean, can you imagine what that was like? Again, not wealthy, the obstacles they faced. Her first album is in 1967, Hello, I'm Dolly. She has 50-plus of them. And, I mean, yeah, 9 to 5 was such a breakthrough, right? The song was so ubiquitous. Then she's hanging with Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin. Yeah. She's hanging with Jane Fonda, right?
I know.
And Dabney Coleman was such a great bad guy in it, too.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God.
She was so great on with Carson, too, right?
Oh, yep.
Poking fun at herself. The self-deprecation and just the whole persona that if you put yourself up in that way, right, with the wigs, the presentation, poking fun at the boobs, everything, and then you're so genuine and sincere as a person, that's not easy to pull off.
No, I have to tell you, I have a good friend who's a sound guy at the network. I'll never forget, I asked him once, you know, because he has such an interesting job, right? He's listening to all the audio.
Yeah.
So he can hear sometimes how people really are, right? Like they may present to the producers and the chorus, oh, hi, you know, wonderful, whatever. And then as they're talking to their assistants or whatever, I mean, he's listening to everything when you've got a microphone on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him, who is like the nicest person you think you've ever interviewed? Like truly nice, like, you know, you really got a great, and he said, Dolly Parton, hands down, like no question, Dolly Parton. And he said, and man, was she funny. And I said, why? And he goes, because I was so embarrassed putting a microphone on her. Like, I turned bright red. Because where am I going to put it?
Yeah, right.
She just opened her top up and said, honey, a lot of people have seen these. You go ahead and just put that wherever you need to for the best sound.
Right. Yes.
So,
you know, it's so good. So we talk about this also, right? We are endlessly divided in the national discourse. We're not as divided with our friends and our family. We can be, right? But can we have now public figures, whether it's movies, music, whatever it might be, where they can approach how beloved Dolly was. Like before Dolly, it was Betty White.
Right.
Right? I want that to be. And like, listen, I'm in the opinion business. I get it. People can agree or disagree. I comment strongly. I still think you can be forceful in your opinions, disagree, and still have kindness and respect and show character. The two shouldn't separate. And I hope we find that for people, even if we don't agree with them in total, but still admire who they are.
Well, so I do think what's interesting about Dolly is that she was never partisan, right? And deliberately political. However, she was a huge supporter of a number of social issues that are now labeled, you know, liberal.
Yeah.
Like right. LGBTQ rights. You know, she consistently was supportive of same-sex marriage over the years. She Black Lives Matter in 2020. She said, of course, Black Lives Matter. Do we think our little white beep are the only ones that matter?
Yeah.
You know, she wouldn't criticize, but she wouldn't endorse Donald Trump publicly. When asked political questions, she often went to kindness and unity. And so that's, I think people, I feel like we've confused now people's maybe values, right, as like being political statements instead of just allowing for her to be really kind.
Mm-hmm.
For her to be one of for her and for her to have an opinion about a couple of things, but she's not like dragging people into it. She's not telling people what to think. She's just saying these are my values.
Right.
But you don't have to agree with my values.
Well, and I'm just looking right now, and I think Fox and CNN. You help me out, Dave. Maybe have briefly touched on maybe one or two other stories, but they've stayed with Dolly almost the entire time over the last just short of 2 hours.
I don't think CNN has left it at all.
Yeah. Maybe I thought Fox maybe did briefly, but maybe it's just a commercial. And there are not that many people left, Jamie. And I think it's a societal thing, too. And again, I'm trying to give her all the credit. I mean it genuinely, where we would view this as such a loss and also celebration of how she lived her life.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't have said it better, Chad.
Why don't we just end on a Dolly conversation? You have a great day. And next week when we talk to you, I heard the special news that just for this segment, you're flying in for the State Fair. So thank you very much.
I would love to. I actually promised my husband. So my husband turned 50 last year. We are going to the U.S. Open next week.
Oh,
over Labor Day weekend. So.
That's great.
Yeah. So I will miss the Great Minnesota Get Together. I love the Great Minnesota Get Together. I hope you have a fantastic time, and I'm sorry to miss it.
Yeah. Federer was practicing the other day, and people were like, okay, Serena, various other. He's like, no. Even though he still looks like Roger. I mean, even when he was practicing, he still looks like.
He's so good.
Yeah. He's fantastic. Thank you, Jamie.
Take care.
Jamie Ukas, regular here every Tuesday. You know what else is a regular part of this show? I talk about Amber Scholl. I talk about insurance. Am I really excited about my insurance? No, I'm not really excited about my insurance, but I have no choice. It is a requirement by the state, by the feds, whatever it might be. So if you have a house, you have a condo, you have a cabin, maybe you have some other real estate, maybe the lake you're on actually has water in it. For most, I'm not sure they have it. So you're getting that boat, you're getting that jet ski out here, you're thinking ahead to your snowmobile. You have some items where insurance is required. You know what you want. You want a great team. Ideally, you want a local team you can connect with. And then they have the national brand, so they have that buying power. They have that leverage. They have experience. That's why my friend Amber Scholl is the perfect combination. Scholl and Associates. An office she's worked at now for closing in 2 decades, running it better than anybody else. So it's teamscholl.com, S-C-H-O-L-L.com. But she has the national brand of American Family, the power. It's worth checking it out right now. Great office, great people. Save some money, get better coverage. Teamscholl.com.